Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. It's the 30th of December, 2017. Just 48 hours from now, it will be New Year's, 2018. And I have all sorts of stuff to go over with you this morning. First, I'm going to tell you a little story. But before we get to that, this is my annual event where we go over my prognostications that I gave you last New Year's Eve. You can certainly look that show up and listen to it and hear for yourself what I forecast for 2017. And I tell you how I did on them. And I give you my forecasts, prognostications, assumptions, and stabs in the dark for 2018 upcoming. And then, of course, next year, we repeat the process. I get to grade myself, and you get to grade me with me on how I did. So, along the way here this morning, we're going to be talking, as I go over these various points, number one, what happened last year relative to what I forecast, and number two, what I'm forecasting for next year, there's a couple little tidbits I'm going to throw in of really interesting stuff. You probably didn't know about this emoluments decision where the anti-Trumpers tried to get at Trump for an impeachment deal and a judge threw it out. I'm going to tell you about that because it ties right into my forecast for the coming year. And you probably don't have the figures. In fact, I absolutely know, because no mainstream media is going to share it with you. The mainstream figures, you know, the Democrats are really planning on women flocking to the polls in support of them, in support of their progressive nonsense. You know, any of you who read the articles on the Right Side website, which are posted steadfastly and perfectly by the producers every Saturday, and it's a wealth of information. I mean, you really should. If you click through those articles, even the ones that just kind of catch your interest, you'll be more informed than 99.9% of Americans. And of course, if you're listening to my show and you're looking at the articles, you're probably more informed than 99.9% of the people in government, which is really scary. Unfortunately, true. But I have some facts and figures for you on how women fared under the Democratic leadership of our friend, the savior of women, Barry Obama, and of course his right-hand henchman, Hillary Clinton, that champion of feminine rights. Well, wait till you hear the figures. You gals didn't do too well for the last 8 years. In fact, I'm not sure you know how badly you did. You will at the end of this show. And then we're going to talk a little bit about, I'm going to give you some facts on what's happening in Europe, which once again, of course, the mainstream media is just not going to bring to you because the mainstream media is all about globalism. Progressives are globalists and mainstream media is progressive. And what's happening in Europe is the breakup of the European Union. Nobody's talking about that. I did bring it to your attention, and I forecast it, in fact, 2 years ago. So, anyway, there's all sorts of little interesting current event tidbits mixed in here with the forecasts. And now we're going to get started. Yeehaw. Here we go, 2017 and 2018. But first, our little story. Now, I'd like to tell you that this story was a fairy tale. And I guess in a way it is, but it's actually the truth. So here we go. So the governor of California, you know, old Jerry, baby, the guy who pardons illegal aliens with felony convictions about guns. Literally 2 days after he has a press conference crowing about the three new gun laws that, his progressive legislature just passed. You know, that guy. Try and fit those two things into your mind. The governor of California, old Jerry, is jogging along with his dog on a nature trail. Of course, it's California. And this coyote jumps out, and he attacks the governor's dog, and then he bites the governor. Boy, the poor coyote. Who knows what happened to him after he bit Jerry. The governor, of course, starts to intervene. But in the middle of his intervention, in the middle of his defense of his dog against the coyote, his mind conjures up the images of the movie Bambi. And he realizes that he really shouldn't interfere with a coyote because a coyote is only doing what's natural. So instead, he whips out his cell phone with his leg bleeding, of course, and he calls animal control. And animal control gets out there after his dog is dead, of course, captures the coyote, and they bill the state for $200 for testing the coyote carcass for diseases. Not the carcass, excuse me, the coyote. He's still alive. It's California, so they didn't do anything to the coyote. And then they charge him $500 for, or charge the state, California, $500 for relocating the coyote. And, of course, Governor Jerry is upset about his dog, so he calls a veterinarian. And the veterinarian comes out and collects the carcass of the dog. And he bills the state $200 for testing it for diseases. The governor, of course, now that he's taken care of the coyote and the dog, goes to the hospital to take care of himself. And he spends $3,500 getting checked for diseases from the coyote and getting his bite bandaged. The running trail, you know, because now there was a coyote in the running trail and it killed a dog and all that kind of stuff. The governor shuts down the running trail for 6 months while Fish and Game, California Fish and Game, conducts a $100,000 survey to make sure that the trail is free of all dangerous animals, including coyotes. And then the governor takes $5,000 out of the state general fund and implements a coyote awareness program. For all the, you know, the reason I'm laughing is that this is a story, but it's just so apropos, so apropos. So the governor, after the $100,000 Fish and Game study, spends $50,000. I'm sorry, it wasn't five. It was $50,000. In state funds implementing a coyote awareness program for all the people who live anywhere near this trail where the coyote killed his dog. And then he has the legislature spend $2 million to study on how to better treat rabies and how to permanently eradicate the disease throughout the world. Finally, the governor fires his security agent, who wasn't along with him on the walk through, on the walk where the coyote attacked the dog. And he fires him for not stopping the attack. And the state spends $150,000 to hire and train a new security agent with additional special training on the nature of coyotes. PETA, P-E-T-A, our friends, PETA protests the coyote's relocation and files a $5 million lawsuit against the state. So that's the story of the coyote in California. And you could take that a whole bunch of ways. Now let me give you the antithesis to that, the 180-degree polar opposite to that. It's Texas. The governor of Texas is jogging, well, he's in a wheelchair, so he's rolling his wheelchair along with his dog along a nature trail. A coyote jumps out and attacks his dog. The governor whips out his concealed carry shoots the coyote, and keeps rolling along in his wheelchair. The governor has spent 50 cents on a 45 caliber ACP hollow point cartridge. The buzzards eat the dead coyote. And that, my friends, is why California is broke and Texas is not. That's my story to start off tonight. And I might say that it kind of ties into what we're going to be going over here. So, let's talk about what I forecast last year. Once again, you folks can go listen to the show. In fact, I may even have the producers, if they can, post it right under this one. So it's easy to find. I think you'll find it kind of fascinating. Number one, I told you that Trump would be selecting, and he had not selected it yet, a very tough cabinet. Tough hombres. Thick-skinned boys who don't take no crap. And he did. And I told you that that cabinet would change the world's perception of the United States, and change the way the United States deals with the world. And that, my friends, has certainly happened. I told you that the president would hit the ground hard on changing the federal judiciary and trying to undo the damage that our friend Barry and Eric and Loretta had done to the judiciary with the appointment of, I'm trying to be nice here, liberal judges who can't spell the word Constitution. You've seen them with Oreck out there in California and this crazy judge in Seattle and the even crazier judge in Hawaii that was appointed by Obama stopping the... This is after the Supreme Court rules on the travel ban that is going to be implemented. These guys are still in these federal courts trying to implement nationwide bans on what the Supreme Court has already proven. It's unbelievable. I told you he would hit the ground running, and he has. He has now appointed more federal judges, more federal appeals court judges, than Obama did in 3 years. In his first year, Trump has appointed more federal conservative judges than Obama appointed judges, liberal judges in his case. And of course, his coup de grace was the appointment at the Supreme Court. And I think that you'll be finding one of my prognostications in advance here, that he'll be making another Supreme Court appointment this coming year, which of course petrifies the progressives and is part of the fuel in their attempt to stage a deep state coup d'etat. I told you that progressives will continue their downward spiral, that they would get nastier, more vicious, that more and more of them would be drawn out of the closet, because that's what Trump does. He draws nastiness out of the closet so that it's in the full exposure of sunlight, away from the darkness it is always hidden in, protected by fuzzy words and lies. And that has certainly happened. If you have listened to any of the press people, if you listen to the hysteria over every tweet, if you listen to the nasty, I mean really nasty stuff that is said about Trump or Republicans, if you look at the attacks on Republicans, the shooting of Scalise at the House Republican baseball game, etc., what I think was absolutely an Antifa coupled with Islamist help tragedy in Las Vegas. And the black-hooded twerps in Antifa shutting down universities, beating up people, you know. I think that you will agree that the left has become more and more and more unhinged. And as they get unhinged, they lie more and more and more, which is almost impossible, because basically every time a progressive, I'm not saying this about you liberals now, remember, There's a difference between liberals and progressives. But every time a progressive opens their mouth, they lie. Barry Obama lied through his teeth. Valerie Jarrett lied through her teeth. Susan Rice was like the epitome of the lying liar. Ben Rhodes was a liar, and a self-admitted liar. I mean, he admitted that they lied about the Iran deal and laughed about it. Nancy Pelosi lies. Chuck Schumer lies. And we're not talking about spin. We're not talking about, you know, kind of manipulating the clay of discourse to kind of make the end statue look a little bit better in perspective. That we're talking about black and white lies. I mean, take a look at this tax law. The Democrats have been running around saying, you know, it's going to cost the middle class money. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. It's all about corporations. Even now that, about 30 or 35 companies have come out in the last week with $1,000 per employee bonuses, raises to $15 an hour minimum wage, 5% raises. I forget, that was a company, I think, just the day before yesterday. Even then, the Democrats say they're just doing it for PR. Well, you know, I'm pretty sure that the worker at Comcast who got a $1,000 check for Christmas doesn't really care why they're doing it. He got a $1,000 check. And the Democrats love to say that in the end, this is going to cost the middle class more taxes. You know, Bernie Sanders was on an interview that I had the pleasure, displeasure, however you want to look at it, to listen to 2 or 3 days ago. I think it was on CBS. And the CBS correspondent was actually quite good. He said, well, you know, the Tax Institute has come out and said 91% of all Americans, most of the middle class, are going to see a significant cash tax benefit from this of $1,000 to $2,000 a family. Do you think that's bad? And Bernie was forced to say, no, that's not bad. It's really quite good. The only problem is it's not permanent. It goes away in 2025. Well, you know, there's two things I can say to that. I'm getting a little off course here, but I think it's important because you'll see where I'm going when I make my prognostications for 2018 here in the next segment. So Bernie says, yeah, it's great, except that it expires. Well, the first thing I have to say to that is, hey, Bernie, how come you didn't get involved in the tax bill and offer up an amendment to make it permanent? Because the only reason that it had to expire, as you well know, is this arcane rule, the Byrd rule, in the Senate, which says that you can't have anything which, you know, screws up the deficit for more than 10 years. And the only way to get around that is if with 60 votes. So 8 Democrats could have switched sides here and made the tax cuts for the middle class permanent. And now they're complaining that because they didn't get involved and the Republicans, because of Senate rules, couldn't make the tax cuts permanent for individuals, it's not a good bill. Let me go one step further, because this is the second thing I have to say about that. Now, let's say I walked up to you, any of you that are listening to me out there in all 50 states and Canada and Netherlands and all sorts of places I get emails from, and let's say I gave you a $10,000 check, and I told you that 10 years from now, I'm not going to give you a check. Or put it another way. Let's say I walked up to you every year for the next 10 years and gave you a $1,000 check on January 1. And then on the 10th year, or the 11th year, you call me up and go, where's my check? And I go, sorry, you know, I'm all out of money. It expired. Now, how would you look at that? Would you look at it as your taxes went up? As your income went up, or that your income stayed the same? I don't know if I'm explaining this right. Would you take the 10,000 knowing full well that the 10,000 isn't going to come to you again in 10 years? Would you take the $1,000 a year knowing full well that in the 11th year you're not going to get a $1,000 check? Damn right you would. No matter how you slice this apple, you're $10,000 ahead of the game, even if I don't give you any more $1,000 checks at the end of 10 years. I mean, progressives, please, how stupid do you think we are? Wow. I mean, it's insulting. Anyway, the progressives, I said, would be coming out of the closet, and boy, have they come out of the closet. I was like A++++ on that prognostication. And, you know, I told you that they would hone in on and drill down on this Russia nonsense. And, man, have they ever. Even in the face of obvious lack of any evidence whatsoever, let me underline that, whatsoever, of so-called Russian collusion, as proven by the fact that now they're talking about obstruction of justice and they're talking about sexual harassment. I mean, now they're trying to dredge other things out of the sea because the original oyster they were diving for doesn't exist. And boy, have they bored down on that. I have to give myself an A++ on that. I also told you at the time, the press was gushing about the transition, how smooth the transition was, how wonderful the outgoing Obama team was to the Trump team last January. And I told you nonsense, and I gave you, if you listened to last year's show, a whole bunch of examples about how the Obama team was purposely sabotaging the incoming Trump team. Little did we know until just recently that the sabotage was in fact treason. The dossier, the illegal FISA warrants, the corruption at the FBI, the corruption at the DOJ. I've gone over all this in my shows. I'm not going to give you the bullet by bullet. You know who it is, right? Orr, Comey, Mueller, Strzok, Lynch, Clinton, McCain. I mean, it's only after the fact that my original prognostication of Obama was sabotaging the transition, it's only after the fact that we know to what degree that sabotage occurred. It was complete, and it was premeditated. And it was without regard or interest for America or the American people. And it was done specifically, and I told you last year, it was done specifically to try and throw every roadblock in the way of Trump dismantling Obama's legacy, reverting the judiciary back to conservatism, and interfering with Trump's implementation of his policy agenda, which is the opposite of progressives, the opposite of globalists. I mean, it was all intentional, folks. I'll have to give myself an A++, triple plus on that one. I told you last year, or I reiterated, because I told you the year before also, that the EU would continue to unravel. And boy, has it. I mean, between the upheaval in Sweden and Finland and France and Germany with this influx of unvetted, many of them Islamists, people from Muslim countries, refugees created by the acts and lack of acts of Barry Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, et al., and I think intentionally, to create the refugees, to create a civilizational jihad in Europe and in the United States, which Trump is shutting down. the EU is in serious trouble. Now, what you don't know, because the press is not reporting it to you, obviously. Okay, you know about Brexit, right? England getting out of the EU, which, by the way, the elitists and globalists over there are trying to reverse. You know, they're trying to undo that election, just like Comey crew and the progressives are trying to undo the election here. You know, globalists are globalists. Doesn't matter which country they're from. But in Spain, and you might have heard a smidgen of this somewhere, but boy, it hasn't been covered. So there's a province in Spain that has wanted to break away from Spain for some time, but that really accelerated after the Brexit vote in England. And it's called Catalonia. And the Catalans, as they're called, the folks from Catalonia, voted for independence a couple months ago. And Madrid, the capital of Spain, threw all their elected leaders into jail. You can't make this up. This is a European democracy, folks. And called for a new election. Well, they just had the new election. And guess what? The Catalans voted for the second time to say, to tell Spain to stick it, we want our independence. The Spanish king, Felipe, did a big speech Christmas Eve, wasn't carried on any of the network. I mean, absolutely was ignored in the United States because, you know, those globalists don't want us little populists getting any ideas. And he begged for unity. This was just Christmas Eve. But, you know, that is a ship, folks, that has sailed long ago in Catalonia and in Europe. Belgium is now looking at splitting into two separate countries. Once again, not being covered by the mainstream media at all. Italy has three different independent movements that want to split off various portions of the country. And by the way, they're gaining a huge head of steam. And Germany, you know, Merkel and her 1.2 million Muslim immigrants and 1,000 rapes. I can't wait to see what the figures are for this year. Huge political turmoil in Germany. The government coalition, remember, in a parliamentary type of government, that's not what we have, but it is what like England has and Germany has and several other European countries. There's various parties in parliament. There may be 8, 9, 10 parties. Israel has the same type of government. And to rule, a prime minister has to put together a coalition of those parties. And some of these coalitions can be quite fragile. And obviously there is a checks and balances within the coalition. Because even a minor party with 4 or 5 votes, if they won't go along with the coalition on a major issue, that issue is going to fail. It's kind of like Marco Rubio saying, you know, I'm not going to vote for the tax bill unless you increase the child tax credit. In the United States Senate, one senator can swing it. Over in one of these parliaments, a section of any coalition, no matter how small, can swing the vote and determine national policy. Anyway, the coalition in Germany is fracturing. Merkel is unable to do anything. And there's also talk about some type of division, I wouldn't call it succession, some type of division in Germany. So Europe, folks, Europe is in a world of hurt. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse for a whole bunch of factors. But that's not what this show is about tonight. I'm just telling you, you're going to see this trend accelerate over the coming year. Even though it's going to take a number of years for the European Union to finally crumble. One of the things that this is going to do, and I'm kind of getting a little ahead of myself, but I think it's the right place to stick it in. One of my prognostications for 2018 is that as things become more unsettled in the Mideast, in certain parts of Asia, not all, and in Europe, because of all this stuff going on. You're going to see more and more. You know, money seeks safety. Water runs downhill, and money always flows to its safest depository. The safest depository in the world right now is the United States. So look for a huge influx of money over the next year or two from lots of foreign places. It's going to be accelerated by the tax deal that Trump just got through. It's going to be accelerated by companies relocating back to the United States. It's going to be accelerated by countries repatriating tax money they've kept offshore because we now have a new lower corporate tax rate. It's going to be accelerated by many things. But there's a lot of money headed toward the United States. Now, whether that's enough to avert bad stuff, I don't know. But it's going to happen. The next thing I forecast last year was oil prices, that oil prices would go up. Once again, as the year before, I was not completely correct on this. Yes, oil prices did go up. I think sweet crude closed at somewhere between right around $60, a little bit less than $60 on Friday, which is up about $15 from where it was, $15-$20 from where it was per barrel a year ago, which was up $15 from where it was per barrel in January of 2016. So oil is on a steady incline, but I forecast it to rise much more rapidly than it has. So I can only give myself kind of a C minus on that one. Now, I will tell you, it will take only one event. Iran sinking a ship in the Straits of Hormuz, some kind of war posture with North Korea. I mean, there's a million things that could spike the price of oil rapidly and dramatically. Interest rates. I forecast that interest rates would be up about 0.5%. And they're up about 0.375%. If you go by prime rate, etc. So I'm right in the neighborhood there. I give myself like a B minus. I forecast that the economy would pick up considerably. And that with a new tax plan, which I forecast Trump would get done in the first 6 months, I was wrong on that. It took 12 months. That with a new tax plan, we would see over 3% GDP growth per quarter for the first time since George Bush. You know what? Even without the tax plan, the last two quarters have been over 3% growth. So I guess you can throw all the spaghetti you want at Mr. Trump, but he's a hell of a better businessman than Mr. Obama. Of course, that's not saying much. I have to give myself an A on that one. I thought that by this time we'd have infrastructure passed and underway. I was wrong. I said that by this time, 1 year ago, that we would have a second special prosecutor for Hillary and Barry and the progressive crew. Now, since that time, we didn't know about Uranium One, or we knew about it, but we didn't know the extent of the skullduggery. We didn't know the Clinton Foundation got $145 million from the board of directors of the Russian oil company that got the 20% interest. We didn't know all this stuff. We didn't know there had been a huge FBI investigation by Mueller and Comey that was swept under the rugs of Russian bribery and extortion relative to Uranium One. We really didn't have a firm handle on how corrupt the Clinton Foundation was. This was at the very beginning of, and we didn't know the extent of, Hillary's private server and 30,000 emails. we don't have a second special prosecutor. I was wrong on that. But on the other hand, I think that with the overwhelming preponderance of evidence that has come out about all this other stuff that we've learned about over really the last 3, 4, 5 months. And trust me, folks, there's a lot more coming. I mean, we're just scratching the tip of the corruption iceberg when it comes to the progressives. I think I'm going to stick with my prediction for this coming year. You will see, in some way, shape, or form, either a secondary level of investigations and prosecutions through the DOJ, if Jeff Sessions can manage to clean up the corruption over there, or through appointment of a special prosecutor, a second special prosecutor. I told you that when Greg Pruitt, he had just been appointed by Donald Trump to head the EPA. And I told you at the time that Greg Pruitt, who had been the governor of Oklahoma, was like the arch enemy of the EPA. He absolutely detests the EPA. And I told you that when he was done with the EPA, it would be down to him and his secretary. While I was overplaying a little bit, by what's going on, not by much. There's been like 3,800 people who have left the EPA because they don't like this huge reversal in policies, the stripping of all their nonsense regulations, the reversal of all their completely made up, I mean fabricated, climate change crap, or the tearing apart of this fabricated science that they use to push these regulations. And guess what? Greg Pruitt has announced that not a single one of those 3,800 people who have left the EPA is going to be replaced. As he said, we'll just do more with less. I think what he means is we'll do less with less. Go Greg. I love it. So I think I was pretty much right on that one. Then I told you that Trump would use term limits as leverage to get some of his deals done. He would threaten to get the American people whipped up to impose term limits on senators and congressmen, and that he would back off on that in return for getting the votes he wanted on policy matters. Well, term limits has not come up at all. You know, it's been a much more rocky road than virtually any of us anticipated in implementing Trump's agenda through a Republican Congress, a la this debacle on health care, which has now been solved with the tax bill. But I'm not going to withdraw that prognostication. I think you will see this come up. It may be after 2018. I mean, I think Trump is kind of a wily fox. He innately senses when the timing is good and when the timing is bad for things. And he understands much better than people give him credit for how his act today, or his failure to act, in other words, what would happen today if he brought up term limits, or what would happen today, what would happen tomorrow if he didn't bring up term limits, I think he knows. And it just hasn't been the time for him. So I'm going to stick with that prognostication, but it did not happen last year like I forecast a year ago. I also forecast that the wall would be under construction. I was wrong. Goes back to nobody could foresee just how obstreperous the establishment rhinos in this Congress could be, and how deep and nasty smelling was the muck in the Washington, D.C. swamp. I still think the wall is going to get built, but it certainly did not get under construction other than prototypes last year. Have to give myself a C- on that one. I told you that sanctuary cities would definitely be defunded. You know, I was right on. Now, we have some of Obama's progressive, can't spell the word, constitution judges blocking the implementation of that defunding. But in the end, they're going to get defunded because Supreme Court is going to lay down the hammer. And in the meantime, I have this sneaking suspicion that even though there's a federal court who has improperly enjoined the federal government from withholding funds from sanctuary cities, why do I think that the checks aren't being sent anyway? You know, the government is very good at slowing down any process they want to slow down. I think we've all kind of seen that. And I would bet you anything that the funding of sanctuary cities, although ordered by a judge who's going to be overturned, I would bet you that those checks, you know, they're just not being printed in Washington, D.C., and there's no stamps on the envelopes. I told you that we would have a showdown with China. Economic for sure, military perhaps. Well, listen, tensions between China and the United States have been ratcheting up in the South China Sea and on the Korean Peninsula. Just the other day, I think it was, what, Thursday, there are now intelligence satellite images of Chinese tankers offloading oil into North Korean tankers on the high seas, thinking they were escaping detection. In other words, China is blatantly disregarding the sanctions that it promised Trump, that President Xi promised Trump, and that China voted for in the Security Council of the worthless United Nations. So my prognostication of, and I might add that Trump tweeted he was very disappointed and that so far he has been soft on China's improper trade and currency manipulation. I think, folks, that you're about to see that end. I think Donald Trump's going to bring the hammer down on China. So I think my prognostication is right on. It's just a little bit delayed. All right. Also, I told you that Trump would throw down the gauntlet on the Iran deal and that he would begin to dismantle it. Right on. You know, he failed to, he refused to certify the Iran deal. There's now a bunch of rhetoric flying around about how they're in violation of the deal. And he's always said, you know, the deal sucks. And by the way, it really does. That deal is just terrible for the world, for the United States, and for Israel. It is just horrible. What we have set up is a North Korea on steroids just 6 years from now. Remember, that deal was 10 years, and then they could build a bomb. That 10 years was 4 years ago. We're 6 years away from Iran being able to do a bomb. And you're dealing with, if you think our buddy Kim over there, little rocket man, as Trump calls him, over there in North Korea, if you think that he's off his rocker, oh man, you haven't seen anything. The folks that are off their rockers are the Muftis in Tehran, you know, Valerie Jarrett's buddies and Barack's buddies. They're off their rockers. I really think Kim, and I've told you this before on this show, I think Kim would like to live. The boys in Tehran, as far as they're concerned, they go to heaven, they get 72 virgins. I mean, we're really dealing with a whacked out mentality. And it is what it is. We're not going to change it. And how Trump handles North Korea is going to determine just how bad the situation is in Iran when it comes time for that. Because if we whack North Korea, we're sending a message to Iran. And if we don't, we're also sending a message to Iran. I told you that we would likely, or we could, my exact words were, we could have a first strike in North Korea and potentially Iran. I think Iran now is a little ways off. I think Iran is kind of in a holding pattern to assess Trump and to see what he does with North Korea. And I think that Trump had hoped that his buddy President Xi over there in China and the Chinese would help him with North Korea. But they haven't, and they won't. And that just became apparent 2 days ago with these satellite images of the end around on energy embargoes to North Korea by Chinese oil tankers. So the first strike on North Korea did not happen, but I will tell you, every day that goes by now, the odds increase. I still think I'm completely correct on this. My timing is just a tad off. I told you that Barack Obama would get more and more publicly active. And sure enough, over the last 2 or 3 months, press conferences and speeches overseas, knocking Trump and conservatives and populists and pumping up the globalist, Islamist, progressive tirade. His latest one was this week, right, with Prince Harry over there in England, where he slapped at Trump for tweeting. So I'd say I was right on that. And I told you that Pelosi, who's really the political god's gifts to Republicans, that Pelosi would be unable to keep her mouth shut, and she'd just keep putting her foot in it. I think I've been right on that, too. I did not realize how bad Schumer would be. I knew he'd be bad. I didn't realize he'd be terrible. I also forecast that a resurgence in American values and spirit would be palpable, that you would be able to feel it, that you'd be able to see it, that you'd be able to taste it and live it right on. That is definitely, positively, absolutely underway. And the last thing I told you was that what the progressives are really scared of, and it has nothing to do with all their trumped-up nonsense, and no pun intended, their trumped-up nonsense about Russia and his mental stability and supposed dementia and uncouth ways and unpresidential tweet. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the fact that progressives were afraid Trump would get it done. And by get it done, I mean dismantle the progressive bastion, deep state, corruption, intertied nonsense, regulation, and control that the progressives have been successful in building in Washington, D.C. And you know what? Progressives were right to be afraid, because Trump is doing a hell of a job on it. He is tearing apart that city brick by brick. And you know, when he finally leaves office, which I hope is 7 years from now, the only thing I really want to see in Washington, D.C. is a bunch of dust and rubble. That would suit your humble correspondent just dandy. So, those were my forecasts last year. And you, of course, listen to last year's show and determine it for yourself. And there were all sorts of goodies in that show, too, which will help you with a stroll down memory lane. Now, let me give you my forecast for this year. We'll start off with the light and airy. Number one, the NFL is going to continue to decline. You know, they just can't help themselves. Roger Goodell is a moron, and he's a progressive moron to boot. He's way more interested in his $49 million salary, which is like a $5 million raise, whatever it is, than he is in running his league. And he's way more interested in appeasing what he believes is the progressive constituency in America than he is at honoring the other 70% of America, which happens to be his fans and his breadbasket. And the NFL stats are horrible, folks. They had to cancel one Thursday night game. They have, I don't know if you know this or not, they have canceled the last Sunday night game of the season, coming up with some excuse about, oh, we don't want to interfere with these other games. Nonsense. Okay, in some stadiums, they have actually hired people. I'm not kidding you now. They've actually hired people to sit in the stands across the way from where the TV cameras are so that there wouldn't be too many empty seats. And guess who's benefiting by this rapid disenfranchisement of the NFL by former NFL fans? That's right, the NBA. They don't have any protests. They don't have any nonsense. They stand for the flag. They pledge allegiance. And their attendance is going through the roof. Must be a correlation. What do you think? I'm not sure Goodell will get it, but I think you and I do. Because, you know, because we're the Bubbas. Right? We got the common sense. I told you really over the last 2 years that there is a concerted effort throughout the world, particularly by Russia, China, certain factions of the United Nations, India, the BRIC countries, to unseat the dollar as the reserve currency of the world and the petrodollar of the world. And I've done many shows on this. Type in petrodollar, type in reserve currency, type in United States dollar. You can listen to those shows. Really some pretty fascinating stuff. But, you know, one of the things which is rapidly taking shape here are cryptocurrencies. I'm sure you've all heard of Bitcoin. It's been all over the news. And there's now a growing feeling amongst experts, and I am not one of the experts. That doesn't mean I'm not one of the experts who has this feeling. I mean, I am not an expert in this. There's a growing feeling that Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency, in other words, it's a digital currency. I can't tell you exactly how it all happens because I'm not sure myself. But it's through blockchain technology. That's what it's called, blockchain technology. And then there's things that they have stashes of bitcoins and partial bitcoins, and there's urethium, and there's all sorts of stuff going on out there. But there's a growing theory on the part of conservative economists that the governments are allowing this crypto market to go bonkers, and it is going bonkers. I mean, the total capitalization of the crypto market has literally gone for like 50 or 100 million to give or take $1 trillion in the last 6 months. $1 trillion capitalization for this digital currency. There are one of the outfits that you can join to buy and sell and trade and hold and all this kind of stuff, Bitcoin, is called Coinbase. Coinbase has 100,000 new signups per day right now. It's worldwide. 100,000 per day. That's staggering. Staggering. Even if each one of those signups is only buying $100 worth of Bitcoin. Staggering numbers. And the run-up in the value of Bitcoin has been from roughly $1,000 per coin, per Bitcoin, as of a year ago, to, I believe, about $17,000 yesterday. It actually got as high as $20,000 of Bitcoin a week or two ago. And it's very, very, very volatile. And trust me, I'm not recommending to you, unless you happen to have $500 that you don't care about losing, and you want to throw it at some Bitcoin and forget you own it and see if it goes to a million, I'm sure as hell not recommending you get into Bitcoin. But it's something that's worth watching because a lot of these conservative economists are now concerned that the governments are allowing this huge crypto market to expand because rather than use the SDR, the special reserve currency of the globalists, to replace the dollar with, they're actually looking at perhaps using a digital currency. And they're allowing private enterprise, which originated bitcoins, to do all the technological work and setup before they step in and take it over and use it for like the ultimate financial control over the world's population. Now, that may sound like a far-fetched, you know, tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, but think about it. I did shows already on what governments are doing to crack down on cash, to try and eliminate cash from the financial system because they can't control it. Just type in cash into the search bar. I'm sure the shows will come up. So, since we know they're doing that, that's absolute, positive, in writing, admitted to, you name it. They're trying to get to a cashless society, in which case the government has far more control. They can't control the dollar bills under your mattress. It would make sense that they might go the next step and actually try and control not just your use of cashless currency, but the currency itself, which would be in some way, shape, or form a takeover or regulation, masking a takeover, of this new, rapidly evolving cryptocurrency, digital currency, through blockchain outfits. Something to think about in the coming year. Keep your eye on Bitcoin. And like I said, if you got $500 and you don't care about losing it, who knows? And if you can't afford to lose $500, don't even think about it. On the international front, the Middle East is going to continue to be a mess. You're not going to see any comprehensive peace deal this year. Maybe the germs of it in 2019. But although Trump's designation of Jerusalem as the capital and his announcement that America would move our embassy to Jerusalem, although that has created all sorts of hate and discontent and turmoil over there for now, in the end, it will be a catalyst to get a deal done. Mark my words on that. And I think he very cleverly said, you know, we only have a 50-50 chance of getting a deal done, and probably less of that of getting a good deal done now. But if we kind of throw a monkey wrench into it in the form of this announcement about Jerusalem, we may create leverage to get a good deal done that will be lasting further down the road. I do believe that was in the calculation. Iran. Iran is going to rattle their sabers, and they may do some stupid things. We'll have to wait and see. They're definitely going to try and keep expanding their control, their regional control and regional power in Iraq and Yemen and Libya and against the Sunni Arabs, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, etc. So I think Iran's going to kind of hunker down and work on its regional aspirations while it sees what we do with North Korea. Who knows? I mean, it's also possible Iran could act in concert with North Korea in some dastardly move. I wouldn't put that past them at all. The two are tighter than two love bunnies. Thank you, Barry. On both counts, I might add. North Korea. Listen, Kim Baby, after watching what happened to Gaddafi at the hands of Barry Obama and Hillary, there's no way Kim is going to give up his nuclear deal. It simply is not going to happen. And I don't think that it's bluster coming from the Secretary of Defense, McMasters, at the National Security Council, Pompey at CIA. I don't think it's bluster at all. I really don't think Trump's going to allow them to have nuclear weapons, particularly nuclear weapons that can reach the United States. So I'm going to repeat my forecast of last year. You will see a preemptive strike, unless there's a miracle, and China wakes up and stops playing the games one against the other, supporting North Korea under the table, Unless China wakes up, you're going to see a preemptive strike on North Korea by the United States and perhaps some of its allies, too. It's going to be a hell of a mess for a while. But the alternative, folks, think about 3 or 4 nukes over the United States. Far bigger mess. Kurdistan. I think you're going to begin to see a bigger and bigger push by the Kurds for their own country, which would be a portion of Syria, maybe a portion of Turkey, although President Erdogan over there is not going to be too happy about that, and certainly a portion of Iraq. And the Kurds are great fighters. And the Kurds have now been armed by the United States, so they got some modern arms finally. And the Kurds were absolutely key in decimating ISIS. And they are not happy. I talked about this last show or the show before about being pushed out of Kurdistan, not militarily, but internationally, being pushed out of Kirkuk, which is a very rich oil area, by Iranian militia under the order of the Iraqi central government, who hates the Kurds. I think you're going to see that definitely evolve over the next year. And that is a separate state called Kurdistan for the 150 million Kurds who have always wanted their own country, basically. Just as the Jews wanted Israel, the Kurds want Kurdistan. And they have the military might to make it happen. I think they also have the support of a lot of the world to make it happen. So keep your eye on that, because that would change much of the geopolitics in the Mideast. And I think mostly for the benefit of the United States. Russia. Listen, Russia's going to continue to play its games. That's what Russia does. I mean, anybody who thinks that Russia isn't going to play a game every time it has a chance to move a checker piece, you're just a fool. And it doesn't matter whether it's the United States, and it doesn't matter. That's who Putin is. Okay? He's all about Russia. Make Russia great again. That's Putin. So you're going to see Russia pushing here and there, continuing to try and destabilize NATO, which is getting easier and easier since the European Union is fracturing, as we discussed just a little bit ago. And I think you're going to see him try and have his fingers in the pie of keeping North Korea stirred up so that we keep occupied, and helping his buddies Iran expand their regional influence in the Mideast kind of as his puppet, and assisting them in their nuclear ambitions. So, and he's going to continue to test the Baltic states of NATO. He's going to continue to screw with the European Union because he supplies 25% of their fuel. It's just what he is and what he does is not going to change. China. Boy, that's a wild card. China is going to continue to push in the South China Sea, building their islands and military bases. I don't think, my personal opinion is, I don't think they're going to come around North Korea. We'll see. I don't think so. And I think that you will see a trade war of some type erupt between America and China will lose, particularly with all this money flowing to the United States for the reasons we discussed before, the tax cut, the economy starting to boom. You know, China has some major infrastructure, financial infrastructure problems. I've talked about it in the past. And they are debt-laden. They've overbuilt. I mean, there's some problems with their economy. And they're not in the position to win a trade war with the United States right now, not even close. But I also don't think that they're in the position politically or mentally to kind of cave in the United States and take care of the North Korea deal. China is a big unknown. They are enigmatic. You know, they are a riddle wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in an enigma, as Churchill would say. Terror. We're definitely, positively, without a doubt, going to see more and bigger displays of terror. And unfortunately, that's also going to be here in the United States. I've said this for 3 years, and unfortunately, I've been right. And it all goes back to the immigration, or lack thereof, enforcement by Obama. You know, the numbers just came out on this, folks. Almost 2 million people immigrated to the United States in 2016, the last year of Obama's presidency. Almost 10 million people immigrated to the United States legally or illegally from the time Obama took office. And if you look at a graph, you can Google it up, it increases dramatically every year. Like the first year was like 900,000, then it was 1.3 million, then it was 1.6 million, then it was, et cetera. 2 million people. And more than 70% of that 2 million in 2016 was through chain migration, which we've discussed on this show, and you've now begun to hear about in the mainstream media. That's where you get one guy over here with a green card, and he can bring over like 50 relatives, grandfathers and cousins and dogs and cats and you name it. Or on this lottery visa. And the last three terror attacks in the United States, by the way, over the last 3 months, I might add, have been through people who came here under a lottery visa or came here through chain migration. You think there's a correlation? You bet. And you're going to see more and more terror around the world, too. I believe there were two terror attacks in Russia the day before yesterday. It's very unfortunate. In fact, it's heartbreaking. Whether or not the terrorists will succeed in pulling off a really big terror attack, as in a dirty bomb, as in a biological thing, as in some, we'll call it standard device, but, you know, in the right place at the right time to really hurt a lot of people, I don't know. But every day that that doesn't happen, the odds increase that it will. Domestic corruption. I didn't talk about this last year, except kind of tangentially. We are going to see the depth and the sordid, smelly, seething cancer of domestic corruption and treason uncovered layer by layer over the course of this year. And if you think what we have learned in the last 3 or 4 months with Uranium One, the Clinton Foundation, Comey, Mueller, Orr at the DOJ, if you think that this stuff smells, if this is taking your breath away, and it's taking my breath, I mean, I knew it was corrupt. I had no idea how bad it was. But I am convinced that this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, I think we're going to find out stuff that's just going to make our eyes bug out. And because of that, I think that 2018 is going to be a pivotal year for whether we begin to see the resurrection of the rule of law in this country and the readherence to constitutional principles which the rule of law mandates, or whether we're going to see ourselves slide further and further and further into the black hole of non-accountability, corruption, oblivion. I don't know how else to say it. 2018 is really a pivotal year. If some of these people are not held to account, Strzok and Comey and Mueller and Hillary Clinton and the Podestas and Uma Abedin and Susan Rice and Ben Rhodes and Barry Obama, if these people are not held to account, then we are doing serious harm to the foundational pillars of this country over the long term. We shall see what happens. Jeff Sessions, where are you? All right. Healthcare. It's not just the beginning of the end. It is the end of Obamacare with the elimination of the individual mandate that got passed in the tax law bill. It is, although not quote-unquote a repeal of Obamacare, it is in effect a spike through the heart of the Obamacare vampire. Obamacare is done. Now, whether a new system of some way, shape, or form is cobbled together by Republicans and Democrats working together, which is about the only way it could be, and whether they keep the name Obamacare, you know, just for political purposes, Obamacare, as we know it, is over. Sometime in the next few months, you will be able to buy whatever policy you want, perhaps just catastrophic, rather than the nonsense that Barry tried to ram down your throat or charge you a $2,000 fine for not taking. You will see because of that, and you will also be able to buy across state lines. That's my prognostication. And you will see because of that a rather rapid decrease, at least in the increases of, and I think overall, in premiums, and an increase in benefits. I mean, we'll see. This is really a big, big deal and a sticky, sticky wicket. But all things lead me to believe that you will see improvement in the types of policies you can get, where you can get them, what they will cost, and what the benefits are. And you will certainly see improvement in your freedom to choose a policy that works for you rather than a policy mandated by the government. Infrastructure. I think, I said this last year, but I think infrastructure will pass this year. But I don't think it's going to be bipartisan. I don't think the Democrats are going to lift one little finger to do anything. They are simply going to beat their divisive chest, play the race card, play the immigrant card, play the homophobic card, and of course the misogynistic, the worn women card, which is what all this lather, the sagacious sex lather is all about, by the way, folks. Don't think that they give one hoot about some gal getting groped by either Al Franken or anybody else. They don't. This is all a ruse, number one, to attack Trump, and number two, to get Democrats, i.e. progressives, elected. And this party, by the way, that professes to be, that number one has like 90% of the perverts. The Republicans, it appears, have about 10% of the perverts. The Democrats have 90% of the perverts. So this party of the perverts that professes to be pro-women, this party of Hillary Clinton, who ruined the lives of 10 women, who testified truthfully about her lecherous husband, Bill. This party, let me tell you, you ladies, the Democrats are counting on women to vote for them in droves in 2018. That's why you got all this nonsense going on. And for no other reason. But let me tell you, in addition to what you already know, let me tell you how you did under the 8 years of Barry Obama. This, by the way, is according to the Washington Times, Stephen Moore to be exact. The poverty rate among women rose to a 20-year high in 2016 at 16.1%. 16.1% of all gals were in poverty. The female labor force participation rate sank to 56.4%. That is the worst reading in 25 years, folks. Less women, if you have a bundle of women who can work, who are physically able to work and want to work, only 56.4% of them were working. as of last year. The worst in 25 years. Nice job, Barry and Hillary. 57 million women. 57 million women over the age of 16 are out of the labor force today and not collecting a paycheck. Here's a report from CNN. Hardly Trump material. CNN reports that the Census Bureau shows 3.7 million women fell into poverty during Obama's term. 3.7 million. And that the median annual wage for women went down during Obama's term by $732 a year. Which is quite a bit of money when you're making 30, 40, whatever thousand, isn't it? Factcheck.org. 92.3% of the jobs lost in Obama's first term were lost by women. I want you to think about that. 92.3% of the job loss were female losing jobs. Females losing jobs. To be specific, 740,000 jobs were lost, and 683,000 of those were held by women. That's factcheck.org. Anyway, when the Democrats, the progressives, the lying liars, try to weaponize this woman thing, keep those stats in mind. And keep your ears to the track, folks, because, you know, this whole women thing is, it's in a state of flux, shall we say. So to continue my prognostications, the stock market. I'm not a big stock guy. I'm not a financial guru. I'm certainly not a financial advisor. But it would seem to me that unless we have a really serious event, a war with North Korea, some kind of sneak attack, a huge terror event, you know, an unbelievable natural disaster, all of which are possible, that we have a ways to go before the stock market craters, and eventually, folks, it will crater. Because we have all this money coming in from everywhere, and it's finding the safest place. And the safest place happens to be in United States T-bonds and T-bills and United States equities, i.e. stocks. But proceed with extreme caution. Real estate. I think you're going to see real estate values and the comeback from the disasters of 2007, 8, 9, and 10. I think you're going to see them continue to remain localized, although I think the national trend is up. And you're going to see some really hot areas of real estate. Denver, on fire. A couple of places in California. I'm not sure after the tax law what's going to happen, but they were on fire. Places in Texas, places in Florida, places in the Midwest, Ohio and Indiana, on fire, folks, on fire. Some places in the Northwest, on fire. I mean, you're seeing 10, 12, 15% increases in house prices in some of these markets. I know that in Denver, I have clients down there. And I can tell you in Denver, boy, it's nothing to have like three or four people bidding on the same house. It's insane. And you know, when markets get insane, they tend to correct. Just keep that in mind. This might be a better time for sellers than for buyers. Think about that. You like to sell at the top, you like to buy at the bottom. You're going to see a huge demographic shift. It's already started. In fact, 500,000 people last year, 500,000, that's a lot of folks, moved from blue states to red states. I forecast that 2 years ago. You can listen to that New Year's show. And it is accelerated with the election of Trump, because people now know what is red and what is blue. And because the blue folks have come out of the closet with their insanity. And the red folks are far more persecuted in blue areas. And it's going to accelerate even more, folks, because this tax law. Because if you're in a blue state and you're getting hammered for $25,000 a year property taxes and $20,000 a year state income taxes, and you can't deduct them anymore, and your neighbors are giving you a bunch of grief anyway because you had a, you know, I vote Republican sign in your front yard, you're going to be leaving. You're going to be leaving for sanity. You're going to be leaving for emotional and political reasons. And you're going to be leaving for fiscal reasons. And you're going to wind up in some of those states in the Midwest and Wyoming and South and North Dakota and Texas. And more, I think you're going to see, which, by the way, is really good for us, conservatives, populists, Americans, really good for us in the long term. You're going to see more and more blue people gravitate to blue areas. And red people gravitate to red areas. And politically, that's good. Because if you think about it, most of the blue areas are in states that are already blue. No Republicans ever going to get the electoral votes in California or New York or Illinois. It ain't going to happen. So you might as well stick all the blue people in those three blue states and take all the red people and stick them in the states where you can get the electoral votes. Just saying. Immigration. I think you will see the wall start to be built this year. I think there will be more and more awareness of illegal alien crime. And I think that some of these morons, like I think it was the day before yesterday, Cuomo, and the day before that, Jerry Brown, are pardoning convicted illegal aliens as a stunt because it doesn't absolve them of deportation under federal law. But I think the more you see this, the more you see the loony left come out of the closet for illegal immigration, which is really their way of getting votes, the more I think you're going to see the American public catch on to it, be disgusted with it, and I think in the end, that's going to be beneficial for some type of, I don't know if it's going to be comprehensive, but it'll certainly be far-reaching immigration legislation this year. I think you'll see the end of chain migration, the end of lottery visas, new controls on visas and visa overstays, perhaps a slight increase in legal immigration, and the beginnings of the construction of the wall, in addition to a renewed effort to enforce immigration laws on the books. We'll see. I mean, that's a really fluid subject. And who knows where some of the rhinos, some of the rhino Republicans are going to come down on it. The elections, next November. I think it's really simple. I think if women wake up and they're aware of the statistics I just gave them, which are the actual statistics of how they fared under progressive leadership, kind of like other minorities. If they're aware of how they're actually treated and fared under progressive leadership, and if Trump and the Republicans can get one or two more big things done, and the tax deal kicks an economy which is already over 3% GDP in the butt, and you start seeing a 3.5%, 3.8%, 4%, who knows what, GDP. I think the dreams the Democrats have of taking back the House and the Senate are fairy tales. If, on the other hand, there's some kind of economic collapse, the tax deal has unintended consequences which nobody can foresee right now. There's some kind of, you know, international disaster which is handled poorly. The Democrats, and I don't think they will, but are successful in their continued attacks and policies of division, etc. Then, you know, the House might be up for play. I still think the Republicans will control the Senate. But I think right now there is an even Steven chance of the Republicans gaining seats in the House and the Senate as there is of them losing seats or losing control. Once again, a very fluid situation based on many, many different factors, a number of which are completely out of the control of Donald Trump, you, me, the federal government, anybody else. They're in the hands of a higher power. I think you're going to continue to see this drive on impeachment, which is total nonsense. It's all political. First of all, look, folks, to impeach, you have to have a vote in the House and then a two-thirds vote in the Senate. Now, obviously, if you have 50 Republicans in the Senate, you need half of those, 25, basically, to vote with the Democrats. And I mean, there just has to be something so egregious that comes out for that to happen. Number two, you know, they're jumping up and down about Donald Trump's sexual harassment of women 30 years ago, blah, 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 blah. Of course, that same person will go on the next TV show at MSNBC and say, well, we shouldn't go after Hillary. That was 13 months ago. What I'm trying to say is, a president may only be impeached under the Constitution, you know, that pesky little document they like to forget about, for a current crime. The statute of limitations has run on all the rest of this stuff, even if it was true, and I think we all know it is not. So, yeah, there'll be lots of drumbeats on impeachment, but I would be surprised to see any real impeachment proceedings. I think it is more likely you'll see a second special prosecutor and a whole bunch of hurt coming down on some of the corrupt progressives. Gun control. I think you are going to see some of the loopholes, and in some cases rightfully, filled in terms of who can get guns, and in the database through which they check your ability to have a gun, or your right to have a gun, or your privilege, however you want to look at it. You have an absolute right to have a gun. But I think that you will see a much better system of background checks, including reporting by the military, which under Obama was like nil, and which would have avoided, for instance, that massacre of all those poor people in that Texas church a month or two ago by a deranged ex-vet who had been dishonorably discharged for assault that the Air Force didn't bother to report to the national database. So I think you're going to see some of that stuff kind of cleaned up, which I think is good. I don't think you're going to see anything whatsoever on true gun control. More on common sense, who should not have a gun. Because I think there's a growing realization, even amongst the anti-gun nuts, not the extreme ones, you're never going to reach them, but some of the anti-gun nuts, that it ain't the gun that kills you, it's the guy who pulls the trigger. All right. By the way, that's my prognosis, that's my forecast for 2018 on a whole range of subjects. So we'll see how your hayseed from Wyoming did next year, shall we? I didn't do too bad last year or the year before or the year before. Unfortunately, I might add, in certain respects, I would have rather been wrong. I will leave you with this one thought. So all the liberal press, which is most of the press, were all jumping up and down. It was their talking points for the last 3 days. Trump's favorability rating is really terrible. It's the worst of any. Blah, 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 blah. He's just terrible. He's underwater, and he only has his base. And blah, 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 blah. Well, let me tell you, Gallup's poll, which they were alluding to, showed Trump with a 46% approval rating and a 54% disapproval rating. Now, hold on to your hats. At the end of his first year in office, Gallup did a poll of Mr. Obama's approval rating. This was before we knew what a treacherous man he was. And this was with Obama getting something like 46% favorable press. Trump only gets 5. And Obama getting only 20% unfavorable press. Trump gets 68. That's a Pew poll. So Obama, with the press totally for him, his rating, folks, at the end of his first year in office, 2010, was 46% approval and 54% disapproval. The exact same rating, despite far more favorable media coverage, as Donald Trump in his first year of the presidency. Interesting little fact that the mainstream media doesn't bring your way, isn't it? I hope that all of you have the happiest and healthiest New Year you have ever had. In fact, I wish that for all of us. And I wish safety, security, prosperity, lots of love, lots of smiles, and lots of laughs to you, to me, to yours, to mine, and to the entire USA. Have a great New Year's, and have an even better 2018. We'll talk to you next year. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.